Good evening. First order of business tonight is a public hearing on the housing, public facilities and economic development needs for the Office of Housing and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program. And I want to know, is there anyone here who would like to address the legislature on that issue? Leslie.
Hi, good evening. I'm Leslie Schill with the County Planning Department. I'm here tonight for the second of two public hearings regarding consideration of proposals to submit to community development block grant funds through the Office of Community Renewal in the state. And we were here in March to open it up for discussion and questions, ideas for proposals. I'm pleased to say that two groups that came forth that night, Better Housing of Tompkins County and Tompkins Community Action, have been collaborating for the last month to build a single proposal, an application that will be submitted to the state to deal with a whole house approach to housing rehabilitation in the county, focusing on energy services, weatherization, as well as well and septic improvements. But the very interesting part about this particular application is that while on site, contractors from the two organizations will identify any other public health or safety issues, and those issues will be dealt with and improved for the low and moderate income households that are being worked with in this program. So I'd like to turn it over to Better Housing and to Tompkins Community Action, to Christine Carrera and Stacey Murphy, to talk about the proposal a bit more. Later on this evening's agenda, there is a resolution to approve this application for submittal to the state. And if you have any other questions, Leslie Schill, County Planning. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Christine Carrera. I'm the Construction Grants Manager at Better Housing. I'm kind of stepping in for John Spence, who's out of the country. Lucky for him. Better Housing's involvement in this grant proposal began after we had completed a community housing needs assessment with the assistance of our consultants at the Empire Housing Center. The assessment identified seven key housing strategies: housing stabilization, handicap accessibility, affordable rentals, senior housing assistance, energy needs, community stabilization, and environmental health. The comprehensive assessment allowed us to identify housing needs in the county that we at Better Housing are not fully meeting with the funding we have in place at this time. Some of the key areas that were identified are the need for well, septic, and roof replacements, as well as the need for rehab work with a strong energy component. Let's see where I go. In the past three rehab grants that Better Housing has completed, we've done 33 roofs, 19 septics, and 6 wells. Currently, we have quite an extensive waiting list of applicants in need of the same work. We have 120 requesting roofing work, 86 in need of septics, and 30 who have identified serious problems with their wells. Through other applications we'll be submitting this season, some of these issues will be addressed, but not completely and not fully. A collaboration that developed between Better Housing and TCA and the county to formulate the application is being presented today. Better Housing and Tompkins Community Action have an ongoing collaborative partnership. Most recently, we worked together on some homes in Dryden under our Dryden Home Rehab Grant, and it was very successful, with TCA coming in to do energy audits, developing a scope for the energy work, and working with us and our construction teams to really fully address the needs in the homes. Let's see, what did I want to say? We also regularly refer clients back and forth. We do a lot of work together so that each client can get as much assistance and as comprehensive an approach as they can. The new application that we're applying for is a community development block grant for comprehensive rehab with a strong component on energy and health and safety, being the wells and the septics. We're applying for $400,000 to complete 7 septics, 8 wells, and 9 rehabs. Many or all of them will have energy work done as well. The two focuses, the energy needs and the environmental health needs, are things that TCA, Better Housing, and other housing agencies and agencies such as COFA see all the time as being some of the most difficult things for people to afford. Roofing costs have gone sky high, and wells and septics are very big, big expensive jobs. So we're really hoping that we can get this funding to assist our local residents.
Thank you very much. Stacy? Hi. I really don't have a whole lot to add to what Christine has said, other than we also very much support this initiative and the strategy. The energy-related work that we've been doing through our programs funded through weatherization and also through NYSERDA, there are a lot of times we reach a certain point and we aren't able to progress past an audit because there are other needs in the home that need to be done before weatherization can be done. So this is a good way to help make sure a home gets a comprehensive approach to having all of its needs met. And in our past collaborations with the county and with Better Housing, we've had a lot of success, and we look forward to continuing that. We also see this as a continuing jobs strategy. In the last couple of years, we've been able to ramp up and hire a lot of people doing some energy work, mostly through the weatherization program, and moving forward, this will help us keep people employed and working in living wage positions. So, thanks.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak as part of the public hearing? About the public CDBG grant? A public privilege will be in a few minutes. Okay. I'd like to close the public hearing and ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members, please.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
15 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And I have a proclamation for National Infant Immunization Week, April 23rd to 30th, 2011. And I wonder if Frank Krupa could come up and accept this for us. Frank is our new Director of Public Health, and I'm not sure. Come on up. Bring Karen. Yes, of course. In case folks have not met Frank yet, we've been here about 2.5 weeks, right?
A week and a half.
Okay. And Karen Bishop, right? Okay, great. The proclamation reads, whereas vaccines are among the world's most successful and cost-effective public health tools available for preventing disease and death, and children need a series of vaccinations starting at birth to be fully protected against 14 potentially serious diseases, and whereas national immunization levels are at or near record highs for most vaccines, and several vaccine-preventable diseases have been reduced by 99% or more since the introduction of vaccines, and whereas immunizations are among the best ways parents can protect their children against serious disease, whereas National Infant Immunization Week focuses local and national attention on the importance of timely immunization for infants and toddlers 2 years old and younger, and whereas in the 17 years since its inception, National Infant Immunization Week has served as a call to parents, caregivers, and healthcare professionals to participate in educational, recognition, and media events to increase the awareness of the importance of immunizing children before their second birthday, And whereas according to the United States Census Bureau, there are 2,700 infants and children 2 years and younger in Tompkins County, representing 2.7% of the estimated 101,136 population. And whereas the week of April 23rd to 30th, 2011, has been declared National Infant Immunization Week to help ensure that all children, including Tompkins County children, have all their vaccinations by the age of two. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim support for the week of April 23rd to 30th, 2011, as National Infant Immunization Week, and encourage businesses, government agencies, community-based organizations, and service groups to spread the immunization message throughout their communities. I also encourage public and private health care professionals, parents, and children's caregivers in Tompkins County to protect the health of children by ensuring early and on-time immunization against vaccine-preventable childhood diseases. Here you go. And both of you, I'd like to invite both of you to say a few words.
Thank you very much. It means the world to us in public health to have the support of our local board here in our public health efforts to continue a high level of immunizations here for our county residents. So on behalf of our whole unit, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. And Frank, please.
Good evening. Frank Grupa, Public Health Director, Tompkins County Health Department. I've had the opportunity to meet most of you and hopefully soon meet the rest of you. I'm very much looking forward to the opportunity to work with you to meet the needs of our citizens and visitors here in Tompkins County and to continue to have great services coming from the Health Department. So without taking a lot of your time tonight, did we want to pitch the 28th? To this group. On the 28th, we're one of our local doctors, Dr. Lair, is going to be giving a presentation about immunizations and answering questions for parents. So we'd certainly encourage folks to come out. Time and place?
6 to 8 at Jillian's Drawers on the Tompkins.
So please encourage folks to attend. There'll be a lot of good information, and it's a local physician that's very excited about this issue and wants to really be involved. So we appreciate your time. Thank you.
And Frank, would you mention the open house that's coming up?
Absolutely. There's so many things. Open house will be the 26th. So next week from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Health Department. We're going to be doing a ribbon cutting first, but then we'll all be offering tours and some light refreshments of the new building. So please come out. We really want to show it off and show you what the fruits of all of the labor was to get us there. And hopefully you guys will be proud of the building as we are, and we can show the community what's happening there. So please join us.
And that's wide open to the public. We invite anybody to join us at 55 Brown Road.
Yes.
So thank you both very much. Okay, great to see you. I would like to ask for an executive session after tonight's regular meeting to talk about labor negotiations.
Yeah.
Privilege of the floor for the public. I have one person signed up, the 3-minute time limit for folks, and Kathy will help you keep track of that. If there's anybody who wants to speak after the first speaker, you can just come up to the microphone. So, Tomo Shibata.
Hello, just a small announcement. I have written my statement, or rather testimony, on my organized stalking abuse victimization, and it's available online. So if you could, it's HTTP / organized stalking abuse one word .wordpress.com. Once again, HTTP:// organized stalking abuse one word .wordpress.com. So I hope you'll be able to. I'd be grateful if you could read it. So far, the local police has treated me more like a threat to the community than. And I haven't really done anything to stop this, organized maiming torture. And this is literally a farce of justice. And I hope, I really encourage you to read this testimony. It's subtitled Scapegoat's Testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? All right. I don't see any municipal officials out there. I don't see anybody. All right. Legislator, privilege of the floor, Nathan.
All right. All right. It is my absolute honor to give the Distinguished Youth Award to Vincent Monticello Jr. and for his incredible service to the volunteer, the Varna Volunteer Fire Company. And I'm going to read a bit of the letter of recommendation so you can get a sense of Vincent's accomplishments. And then also, and I'll give let him speak, and Wendy and Roy, if you want to add a few words too, that'd be wonderful. All right. So Vince joined the Varna Volunteer Fire Company when he was 16, and in less than 3 years, he became an interior firefighter, a driver operator of all five of the VVFC fire trucks, and has been elected a captain, board member, and most recently, assistant fire chief. In addition to being their number one responder, responding to over 84% of our 333 calls this past year, he is a member of Dryden Ambulance Company, where he won an award for his role in their response to a bad trauma call last year. Vince received the 2009 recipient of the he was the recipient of the 2009 Chucky Fletcher Award for outstanding character and volunteerism, as well as the 2009 Dryden Rotary and the VVFC VVFC Firefighter of the Year Award for his outstanding services. He won the 2010 Dryden Rotary Emergency Services Member Award, as well as the VVFC Firefighter and Emergency Services Member Award of the Year for his outstanding services. He attends classes at TC3 and also works at the airport fueling airplanes. This past year, Vince became a co-training officer of the VVFC. He attends over 90% of the Varna Thursday night trainings and is responsible for teaching a quarter of them. In 2011, he will be the main training officer, and they look forward to this in the company. In conclusion, and this is what Wendy and Roy wrote, in conclusion, Vince is the friendliest, most mature and responsible, eager to help, ambitious, committed, highly qualified, enthusiastic, and great to be around person that they've ever met as a volunteer responder. So with that, congratulations, Vincent. And,
I wanted to thank everybody in the fire department for their support over 3 years and really being patient with me when I first started my training at the Varna Volunteer Fire Company. And they're a great bunch to work with, and I'm looking forward to working with them for a number of years. Thank you.
Thank you. And Vincent, I'm going to give you this plaque here. And so this says, Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Vincent Monticello in recognition of your community, outstanding commitment to your community, April 2011, sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Cayuga Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, A&B Awards, and Engraving.
Thank you.
Wendy and Roy, do you have anything you want to add?
Tonight, just before this, we got three motor vehicle accidents, and we had to actually hold him down so he wouldn't respond. The other thing is someday I do hope that Vince will be one of our Ithaca paid firefighters. I hope he'll be here, so I hope that he'll be serving us in that way in the future. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Vince, and congratulations.
Roy?
Roy. Sorry, yes, Roy. Please. Sorry.
I'd just like to say this is our future in our fire department, and he's doing a great job, and we can't ask for anything better.
And Roy and Vince is the second Varna Volunteer Fire Company young person to win this award. So.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very, very much. Great to see you all. Any other legislators? Pat and Dooley?
I just wanted to remind my colleagues that on this coming Monday, April 25th, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, The Tompkins County Broadband Committee is hosting a meeting at 1, I said at 1 o'clock, in the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Library. We are going to be having two speakers coming to us from Albany to talk to the committee, and we have invited a number of people from the community, but it is also an open public meeting, so anyone out there who's listening who would be interested in attending is welcome to do so. I wanted to mention that one of our speakers is David Solway, who is the director of the Enterprise Program and Performance Management Office and Broadband Program Management Office for the Office of the New York State Chief Information Officer and Office of Technology. If I can wrap myself around that. And he's coming down to talk to us about some current trends and what's happening and how we can participate in some of the things that are going on. Our other speaker is going to be Bill Johnson. He is with the Office of Cybersecurity. He's had over 26 years of experience in GIS mapping and brings us a lot of experience that I think will be helpful to us in what we're doing with the Broadband Committee. So I hope many of you will be able to join us. 1 o'clock, the Borg Warner Room on Monday. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Dooley? Well, Leslie, did I see your hand up before? Did I see Leslie's hand up?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Dooley. Okay.
Yes. This Friday is Earth Day. I think Earth needs more than one day. I apologize for not having gotten my act together to draft a proclamation, which has been what we have done in past recent years. Instead, there's a title on the agenda for a member filed resolution. Because I was out of town and had car trouble, didn't get back until late yesterday, I sent something into the board office today, and I see typos or missing words, so I'm really embarrassed. And I will take care of that when we get to that. But what I wanted to say now is we really need a new economy to match what needs to be done to save Earth, which is our home. We have a fossil fuel-based, auto-centered one now, a throwaway economy, and that's just not going to get us anywhere. I get discouraged working on this year after year, but I was reminded by Lester Brown's most recent email from the Earth Policy Institute about what our country did in World War II, converting from a civilian economy to a wartime economy in a matter of months. It was so dramatic. I remember Victory Garden in my parents' yard at that time. That's my age, given away. And knowing that we did that once, I'm sure we could do it again. I just hope everyone rises to the challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. Carol?
Oh, thank you. I have a few guest-drilling items. I also noticed that Governor Cuomo finally appointed a committee to look at where to cut waste in New York State, and he has appointed Antonio Perez, who was the CEO or is the CEO of Eastman Kodak, to chair that committee. And I happened to get sent back, rerouted by U.S. Air just a few weeks ago on my way back to Ithaca, to Rochester. And they sent me back to Ithaca in a taxi cab. And my cab driver was a former employee who'd been downsized and laid off at Eastman Kodak, who told me that Kodak in the last decade has downsized 60,000 jobs. The gentleman was an engineer and was driving a cab and felt very lucky to have a job at all, driving us back to Ithaca at midnight. Should be interesting coming up. I have two gas drilling items. I just wanted to make sure that people saw this morning's Ithaca Journal, two articles, Pennsylvania looks to cut off drilling wastewater. The DEP, which is the equivalent in Pennsylvania of our DEC, is now noticing that rivers and streams are being contaminated, and they suspect that There's some evidence that it is being tied back to the disposal of wastewater from gas drilling activities, and are sensing that they may be moved too hastily in setting their requirements. So all the more reason for us to keep up our request that New York State make sure that they get the regulations right if they're going to do it. And the other was that our State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is filing a suit at the national level, contending that the national level, when they passed the exemptions for specifically for the hydrofracking process to federal clean water and air requirements, that they possibly violated the National Environmental Policy Act. So he's putting the full force of state law and request behind behind that suit, and so I think that's encouraging. And if I may, a third quick item. I have also reached several of our state assembly and senators and a long conversation with somebody at the DEC about the issue I've talked to you about regarding the ways in which the guidelines being proposed may have a very serious negative impact on residential lending. Apparently, the ability of our banks to sell their mortgages that they've underwritten on to the secondary mortgage market may be seriously impacted by the current guidelines, and apparently those guidelines predate by far the 1992 statement that this was all based on, and the response that I got from the DEC was essentially, we've been doing it this way forever, we didn't feel a need to look at the economic impact in that regard, nor, I spoke directly to the gentleman who was responsible to look at all of the comments regarding the physical layout of properties, the surface, the setback requirements, who in over 3,000 comments of those 14,000 that were directed to him and that he read, he did not see one comment that concerned this. So he was interested, not happy to have new information, but ended up requesting that I send further information and giving me three other people to contact. So I will continue to report back.
Thanks. Thank you, Carol. Pam, and then Will.
I pass.
Oh, Will.
Thank you. Last weekend was a typical Ithaca gray, cold Sunday, but I responded to an email invitation to go out and help clear brush on the someday to be open Black Diamond Trail, which, as some of you know, is a project that is probably older than certainly me in terms of it's the dream that we would convert this whole railroad bed into a trail. Starts near Cass Park, goes all the way out to Trumansburg, and has been kind of run into innumerable obstacles. But in the meantime, a group of citizens who really want to see this come to be have put out the call, and with the cooperation of state parks, went out and started clearing a portion of the trail. About half a mile done in the area about Agard Road, where Agard Road comes up and the trail route crosses that. I mention this because I think it's exciting to see citizen activism step in where the government seems to be painfully slow. And if any of you have any desire to be part of a future trail clearing, it's fun. I would encourage you to do that and let me know. I'll send a word out. But you can also Google blackdiamondtrail.org, and they will tell you the long and distressing history of this project, but also how you can be involved. Make sure it comes to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Thanks, Martha. You won't be surprised if I announce a couple of things regarding equine and horses. A week or so ago, we in this community hosted the regional equestrian championship teams at Cornell. And Cornell was the host college. There were teams from all over the United States here. Carol will be interested in that because of the tourism aspect that it provides. And I'm pleased to let you know that we had two. Cornell came out second, which isn't bad. They won the regional championship for the first time in the history of the equestrian team, which was quite nice. And we're sending two women to the national championships in Lexington, Kentucky in about 2 weeks. The event that's going on right now, this week, Cornell is hosting the Northeast Regional Polo Championship Games. This was started on Monday. It'll run all the way through till Saturday. There are, again, teams from Texas, Virginia, Maryland, Connecticut, Colorado, California, and they're competing now. Earlier this afternoon, the Cornell women's team won, and we'll be going into the national finals on Saturday. We hope that the men can do as well tomorrow. The reason I mention that is the equine piece up at the university often doesn't get much play in the paper. If you're a hockey fan or basketball fan, and football and baseball, those get the major plays because those are the sports that bring in a lot of dollars and cost a lot of dollars. The kids that participate, the young people that participate in this particular area and this sport, really put a lot of time and effort into it, and their parents do too. The reason I wanted to make it known, particularly to Carol, Carol's our representative to the tourism board, there are probably as many as 150 visitors to our community at least this week regarding the polo, and there were probably touching about that number a week or so ago when the equine equestrian competitions were going on. You probably haven't heard anything about this, but because the money circulates in this community, these are tourism dollars. They stay in the local motels, they stay in the local hotels, they have to eat, and on and on and on. And that's one of the pieces that we try to promote, certainly in this community, so that we can turn to the tourism and room tax as opposed to our property tax to support other things that are going on here. But if you have an interest, you can catch the remainder of the polo matches. If you've never seen one indoors, it's quite exciting. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Brian?
Just one thing real quick. In attendance tonight is our own Susie Cook with her daughter, who is actually here to observe. And I've actually signed off for her already. She's required to be here for 2 hours. I think they ought to stay the whole time. You'll see what government's really about. This looks like it's a long one. I had a question, though. The open house at the health department, I didn't catch a time for that.
Four to six.
Next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday at the health department.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks. I was looking through the resolutions thinking, why is Susie here? What do I have to move up to make sure? Thank you. Jim.
To follow up on Will's comment, Scott Wiggins from the STPB has organized a similar operation, or maybe he was involved in that one. He was down at Stewart Park Saturday morning at 9 o'clock and had a few people show up there and begin to clean up Stewart Park. Scott has some things in mind. He wants to see something happen in Stewart Park. It's in dire need of a lot of attention. And I mention that not because I'm a city rep, but I was once, and it seems to be it's a great place, and it needs some help. And Scott is in the business of trying to do that by organizing those kind of events.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else? Mike.
The silence out of Albany is deafening on the issue of
a state independent redistricting committee. I keep searching our local newspapers to see something from our local legislators in the Senate and the Assembly in support of an independent redistricting commission for state and federal districts. So far, I've heard nothing. I guess I'm a little tired of our three state senators, that's Nozzolio, O'Mara, and Seward, and our assemblywoman, Lifton, taking a back seat on this. I don't think it shows much courage. I think they should stand up. I don't think they should be lapdogs for their leadership. And I think they should say we need one of the redistricting commission and not leave it to just the governor and former Mayor Ed Koch to be talking about it. Our locals should be talking about it, too, because it's the right thing to do, and we need to expect it. And if we don't hear it from them, or if we hear this nonsense about, well, let's have a commission, but after the 2020 census, then I think we should remember that when it comes ballot box time in 2012.
Thank you, Mike. I heartily agree. Anyone else? All right, thank you all. We have a special presentation tonight. And I see Leslie Schill in the back. I see Cheryl Nelson as well, and maybe other folks. But Leslie, why don't you come on up? Yeah, come on up. Our annual sustainability team report, and that the written summary was in your packets with legislative materials. So, Leslie, hello.
Good evening again, everybody. I'm very happy to be here tonight on behalf of the Tompkins County Government Sustainability Team. The team, for all of you who haven't thought about them this week, represents staff members across all departments who are working toward making county government more sustainable in our everyday operations and how we work. And we've made a lot of strides, particularly under the dynamic leadership of Cheryl Nelson, who has really spearheaded the group and who's here this evening. And I have inherited this, and I hope to bring as much enthusiasm as she has to the effort. I'm going to be turning over in a moment to Arel Lamaro and to Kat McCarthy, Arel from Facilities, Kat from Solid Waste, so they can talk about some of the on-the-ground activities. But in your packet, I just wanted to identify, this is a really short list of the 2010 accomplishments and highlights. The groups that we have, the committees that have formed, they're working autonomously out there. They're identifying issues and implementing new initiatives, and the last 5 years have been incredibly successful, I would say. I just want to take you to the last page there where we're looking forward to 2011. We've made a lot of progress on waste reduction, energy efficiency, renewables, environmentally preferred purchasing, and 2011, we're going to turn our attention toward employee education and engagement. We really want to bring staff into this. We can't make the strides that we need to work sustainably without having staff integrally involved. So we're going to try to develop a couple new tools that really get staff involved in working sustainably. And then we're also looking to take a facility-by-facility approach to sustainability. So bringing all of the initiatives that we're working on, whether they be waste and recycling, composting, looking at the resources of each facility, energy and water, but we're going to look at them facility by facility, so by county building, and we're really going to try to assess where we are, make some baseline statement by the end of this year, and look to track into the future, develop individual plans for each building. So this will include what's happening with the employees in that building, programs that come out of that building, special ideas that they can then share out that could be used countywide. But we know some of our facilities are specialized and have different needs and different uses, so they will be specific to those facilities. But we have hopes that this could then feed into countywide measures in the future. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to those that are actually doing the work on the ground.
Good evening. I have an update on two of our subcommittees. The first one I'm going to talk about is the Waste Reduction Subcommittee. And just as a little bit of background so you understand, in 2008 and 2009, we completed waste assessments in every single county department. And as a part of that process, we determined a waste reduction representative for each department, and that person is acting as our contact to help us implement the initiatives and the recommendations we made from the waste reduction report. One of the things that came out of the waste reduction reports for select locations was implementing a composting program. In 2010, we implemented a program in two buildings for off-site food waste composting collection. Those two buildings were the Tompkins County Solid Waste Management Offices and also the Public Works Division building. And through that program in 2010, we diverted 2 tons of material from the landfill. In 2011, we're targeting 2 additional buildings, including the Human Services Building and the Public Safety Building. Another initiative that we worked on was confidential document destruction. In October of 2010, we signed a 3-year contract, the county signed a 3-year contract with Challenge Industries to handle their confidential material. Between January and March of this year, they've already handled 11.4 tons of material. If we're looking at that and projecting forward, that's over 45 tons of material for the rest of the year. So this is a significant amount of material coming out of the waste stream. And the important thing to understand is that a lot of this material already was being handled as confidential documents, but that material is being taken out of the county. And through this partnership with Challenge Industries, the material is being handled locally at the Recycling and Solid Waste Center. And so that helps support our local programs as well. So it's a really beneficial initiative. Most of you are probably aware that we started the single stream recycling collection at the curbside on March 7th. We are also now working with county facilities to implement a single stream recycling collection and handling from county buildings. So those are what we're kind of working on right now with the Waste Reduction Subcommittee. We also have the EPP Subcommittee. It's an acronym, Environmentally Preferred Procurement. So that's looking at our green purchasing. Staff at our offices work on our Finger Lakes Buy Green website, which is a green purchasing resource. In 2010, we've added additional products and a new category for it. This resource is designed for everyone, all purchasers pretty much. So it could be residents, but it could also be businesses. And so we added additional products, including compostable disposables, as well as services, which hadn't been listed on the website before. That website's been around since 2006. Through that subcommittee, we're also providing support to county departments. So we help them understand what and how to buy green, help provide some additional hands-on assistance when it comes to green purchasing, maybe recycled content products. We're keeping update with state initiatives, so making sure that the local level stays in compliance with what's going on at the state level, new regulations and such. We're also a member and coordinator of the Finger Lakes Environmentally Preferred Procurement Consortium. You may have heard of that called as FLEPIC. That's local institutions and organizations, including TCOG, the municipality aspect of it, as well as the colleges and universities. And we're working together to share resources to bring green purchasing more local and try and support each other's initiatives. So looking forward, we're continuing to share resources. We're continuing to stay up to date with what's going on at the state level. There's a lot of really exciting initiatives on green purchasing at the state level and extended producer responsibility. We'll be combining the Waste Reduction Subcommittee and the EPP Subcommittee to form a Waste Reduction and Resource Management Subcommittee. That group's going to be looking at it from the standpoint of how can we buy green and also look at it through the lens of waste reduction. And all of this is going to be helping us work towards our goal of 75% waste reduction by 2015. So thank you.
Thank you, Kat. Arel, if you're going to sit there, you need a microphone.
One of these,
does somebody know? Is that what works?
Okay, the subcommittee that I'm on is part of the sustainability team is the Energy Efficiency Subcommittee. That's one of the two subcommittees. The one I'm presenting on today is on energy efficiency highlights that we've done over the last probably a little over a year and a half. And so I'll start with just the first one is the annual report that we get from Johnson Controls as part of the energy performance contract that we entered in back in 2006. The first full year of the performance contract was 2007. It's a 15-year agreement. So they just reported to us back in March. I took excerpts from the report and modified it, but basically what they're guaranteeing is over 15 years that we're going to save approximately $4 million as a result of the energy improvements we did back in 2005 and 2006. This 2010 was the completion of year four of that agreement, and the savings reported in 2010 as a result of those improvement measures was $245,587. This is kind of a cost avoidance overview that shows the costs that we avoided by doing these projects. That green wedge at the top are the savings over the four-year period. So at the far right, we've saved $1.2 million total as a result of the project that we've done at the completion of year four. This is basically in consumption. We've saved 50.5 billion BTUs. And the equivalents are down at the bottom if you want to pull out your calculators. The FIMs, we call them, is their facility improvement measures. The majority of the improvements that we did back then in 2006 had to do with lighting, about 62%. And then the remainder had to do with either boilers, controls, where we installed controls in various buildings. We put these vending misers, and what many employees probably don't like are these plug load controllers. It shuts your monitor if you step out of your office. And then I remember when we first installed them, they thought that their computer shut off, so they were rebooting, not realizing it was just their screen that shut off. And those are basically all of the improvements measures that we did. On the electric side, this is on the natural gas side, boilers, outside air modifications and controls. This is the environmental benefits. So last year, we saved 1.4 million kilowatt hours and 63,000 therms. And then you can see the equivalent about a third of the way down. Carbon dioxide tons is 975. And then at the very bottom, it shows what the equivalent would be, basically 211 cars off the road or over 2,500,000 car miles driven. Whoa. I don't know what happened. I can't understand at the top. But anyway, those are environmental benefits. That's cumulative over the four-year period. The very bottom, the yellow line, is that we've saved, since we started, 6.8 million kilowatt hours and 316,000 therms. And then tons of CO2 is 4,708 tons of CO2, or 10,949 barrels of oil. Oh, wow. You know, I think what happened is this laptop was loaned to me, and it's a newer version of PowerPoint. Any case, that's why I'm here, to translate. This is basically the heating degree days. The first bar is the base year that we used was basically the benchmark prior to us starting any of these improvements. So heating degree days basically was the blue. 2010, it was slightly basically what you would get out of this graph. It was slightly colder in 2010. And so that's important as we look at the next graph. This shows that in comparison, first at the bottom, if we look, the base year was 2004. 2010, we actually used less electric, basically 1.2 million kilowatt hours less as a result of the improvements, in spite of it being colder last year than the base year. Then up at the top are the buildings. The ones that have red numbers and the blue boxes are the buildings where we've seen the greatest savings. Very top public safety building, new library, the court complex, mental health, airport, human services, and public works. Almost every building has seen significant savings as compared to the benchmark year. I think the one that's most impressive is this next one. Okay. This is cooling degree days. This is basically telling us that it was a warmer year last year than the base year. which would lead one to believe that then we should have used more energy than as a result of that. But in fact, you see the larger buildings in the red. Look at the new library. We actually used almost half as much energy in natural gas last year than we did in the base year. Same with court complex. Basically, it's that red bar. The blue bar was 2004. So we used less than half of what we did back in the base year, near the bottom human services building as well, and public works. So we saved about 91,000 therms of natural gas as compared to the base year. Anyway, that was the part that I like because it's numbers. This is the funner part. These are actually energy projects that we've done over the last year or so. First at the mental health building. There's a view of the mental health building. See at the very top what looks like a silo? That's actually a cooling tower. We replaced that cooling tower, much more energy efficient, plus it doesn't corrode. It's that plastic versus steel. And there's a closer view of the cooling tower that was installed by with contractors and our staff doing the piping. And actually, I climbed up that scuttle ladder, and there's a view from the top. I don't think Frank Croteau was around, but I did follow safety procedures. There's a nice view from there looking towards our court complex there. We replaced the boilers in that building. Those three boilers are much more energy efficient and actually are better that we located them so it has better access for servicing by our staff. And also we put some redundancy in there. If we lose a boiler, we have some redundancy so we can still heat the rest of the building. There's a close-up of these boilers. It's about a third of what the old boilers were. That's our solar thermal. That provides the hot water for the entire building, and those are basically solar panels. We evacuated two solar panels installed by our staff on top of the penthouse of that building. There's the controls. That's the black box for facilities. If the whole building goes down, whatever's in there doesn't go down. And it basically has the memory of the operation of all of the systems there. That's an instantaneous water heater. If we don't have sun, that provides the heat for hot water, so we're not heating and storing it in a storage tank. So it's instantaneous. There's one of our staff installing a unit for server room in that building, the mental health building. We're combining two server rooms there, and it's an energy-efficient unit, the one that Joe is aware of. Public safety building. We installed, in the past I've used the term variable speed drive or variable frequency drives. Rather than having a drive that turns a motor at so many revolutions per minute, this variable speed adjusts to the demand. So you're saving energy instead of having constant number of revolutions. And so both of those boxes are variable speed drives for the cooling tower of the public safety building. And there's a view of the cooling tower. It's an indoor cooling tower that provides the cooling for the building. And we also did get rebate money from NYSERDA by installing that. Solid waste building. There's a view of the building. We replaced the boilers in that building with energy efficiency boilers. Those tiny black boxes are the boilers. The old ones were about four times the size, and they were mounted on the floor. So we were able to provide additional room. That's basically a closet. That's a utility closet and a janitorial closet, so it provided more room. To the right is a storage tank for the solar thermal array, so that provides the hot water for the solid waste offices. So it's similar to what we installed at the mental health building. At the Emergency Response Center is an ongoing project that we hope to complete within the next month. That is what we call a chiller. I think you've heard that word before. That is providing cooling for the building. But also it runs during the winter, unfortunately, because we have to cool all of the communications equipment in that room that generate a lot of heat. The problem is that when it gets so cold in the winter, that chiller trips out. It's only designed to work to like 10 degrees. So if it drops below zero, it trips out, which requires them to open a door into the equipment room, which is problematic if it gets really cold. There's someone always there. But in any case, we are installing this unit. It's much smaller in scale, and this would kick on during the winter to cool only the communications room so we can shut that large chiller unit that's on the other side of the building. There's another view of it. There is exactly enough room there, and this is the equipment room there at the Emergency Response Center if you've not seen it before. It's actually three times the size. I only took one view. And we're modifying the air handling unit there so that we can convert it to do cooling during the winter and adding additional ductwork. This is the interesting thing is that this was actually the first array that has been installed on a county building, and it's for the building that you're attending the open house next week at the health department. Unfortunately, it's still not operational. It hasn't been commissioned, which is a requirement for LEED, so we don't want to accept it until it's commissioned because we don't want to assume any warranty issues with that. So the other two were installed after this one was actually put up, so we actually started using solar thermal at mental health and then solid waste. This one hopefully should be operational within the next 30 to 45 days. It's a much larger array. It's twice the size, and it will provide the domestic hot water for the health department building. Also, you will notice the roof is a white roof. It's our first what they call a TPO roof. Provides better it's better insulation, and you also get less heat insulation, so the black roofs tend to absorb more heat. So we got one of those, and we've done other measures in that building, but I didn't have enough time to do that. That building, we hope to get our LEED silver this year. The last piece that's remaining for the health department is the commissioning. The reason it's taking so long is because I'm a stickler for making sure that the contractors are held to the full requirements of the specifications. So each time they tell me they're ready, I ask them certain questions. When they say no, then I say, okay, well, come back when you're done with these reports. So, you know, we're getting our money's worth. However, we have a deadline of November, end of November, to meet, because if we exceed that deadline, then we won't get basically $115,000 incentive money from NYSERDA. So they're under pressure now to get this completed, and we're very close. They've got about two more things left on the list of 50, and so we should be starting within the next month. So that's my report on energy efficiency highlights for the county.
Thank you, Pam, and then Dave.
I just wanted to know who did all the boiler work.
The one at Solid Waste, our staff. The one at Mental Health, we contracted that out.
To who? Is it local?
We crested bids locally, but they were not low bidders. It was, I think, out of Binghamton, Tri-Cities, I think. Did very good work for us.
Dave, and then Peter?
Yeah, well, what's the ROI on those heating units, the thermal hot water?
Within 2 years, we feel we'll get our return on our investment on those units. They're fairly, I mean, those units that we got, they're Apricus units. They cost us just shy of $2,000. Then we installed it. It's fairly simple to install. We also like the instantaneous water heater. Fairly compact unit.
Right.
Just on the wall.
I hear some people thinking about doing some of their own retrofits, and they're going to ask Arel for advice. I got Peter, Frank, and then Carol.
I got a couple of questions. One is when you give the numbers on the savings over the year, does that include what you've paid for the equipment to make those savings? Is that charged against how much you save?
Which I'm not following you exactly.
Well, you said that on these programs we're going to save certain number of several million dollars, and I can see that could be the saving on the actual cost of the fuel to do it. But on the other hand, it's cost us some money to
correct.
Do that. And then, if you're really doing an honest cost accounting, I would think you would want to deduct the. An amortized cost for the capital to do this energy saving. I just wonder if you had done that. Do I make myself clear?
Yeah, I understand now. Yes. Yeah. those numbers would not reflect that. The project, total project, cost us about $4 million to install basically boilers and lighting and such. And those savings are the avoidance cost. What had we not done that, that's what we would have been paying for energy.
Now, okay, so we're saving. So how much are we going to save over the lifetime of that equipment? It's cost us $4 million. What's the expected lifetime of that, and how does that compare to the?
Well, we bundled the project. So if you're looking at the boilers, probably 30 to 35 years. The lighting.
I was asking a general accounting question, and it seems to me that when you present it, you should present it with the price of doing it deducted. So that was one comment. And
well, if you said, Aurelia, you said it cost about $4 million to put the equipment in, and we've saved about $4 million in energy bills right now. So from here on out, it's all
right.
It's all a gain,
but,
right?
But there's some length of time, then we'll have to replace the equipment at some time. So, I mean, there's a usual way of doing that calculation, and I think that, you know, it would be fairer to do it that way. And the other question I had was, it seems odd to me to use a chiller when it's at 0 degrees outside to cool off equipment. Can't you just blow cold air through the equipment room from the outside for free?
You'll freeze the equipment.
What?
You'll freeze it. I mean, we do what we call economizer, so that's part of the system where during shoulder times of the year we'll bring out cool air to cool the building. But when you get, you know, when it's 10 degrees out, we can't bring 20-degree air into the building. We'll freeze their coils. So we install that unit. The chiller, I mean, that chiller serves the entire building. However, when it was designed, I think they had originally intended that chiller to go below 15 degrees, and it doesn't. And so we put in this other unit that will achieve that. We do actually have an emergency where we can actually flow water through the coils to cool that space, and we had to do that once. However, you're dumping the water, so it gets pretty costly.
Martha, can I ask a question about the previous presentation about the solid waste?
We're almost a half an hour so far in this presentation, so briefly. You mean for Kat?
Yeah.
Where'd she go? Kat? Yeah. Go ahead.
Have we ever considered doing a countywide composting, you know, on the garbage collection to have people separate out what's compostable and what goes into the landfill and achieve some reduction in landfill in that way?
Sure. We are looking into some of those initiatives. That's something I think we're looking at for the future. One of the things we're talking about is expanding the food waste collection, perhaps at the public drop-off area. And we also help fund the Master Composter Compost Education Program. So we are providing education for home on-site composting, which saves a little bit of energy as well. So we are trying to work towards encouraging more waste diversion through composting, for sure.
Right, but I mean, it would be nice in households like mine, where I don't know what I would do with a composting if I had a compost, because I don't grow anything. It would seem. I know I've seen this elsewhere. I saw this in Germany, where the curbside had a compost place and a non-compostable place, where people separated it from their own usage. Have you ever thought about that?
Stay tuned.
Yeah, there are other models out there, and I know that we're in the process of starting to work on our solid waste management plan, and I would think that we're going to be looking at some expanded compost collection through that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, briefly, Frank and Carol.
Aurel, I want to address something Peter asked. Of the $4 million investment, in order to achieve the capital installation, was my recollection is some of that came from NYSERDA grant money. I don't think it was all county funding, because in addition, that one array we're waiting for it to be approved and we'll get some reimbursements. I think Peter's question is a good one, but I think if we're going to break down the expense of installing the equipment and then amortize it, we need to understand where the money came from. The second is, I don't know when the appropriate time would be, but this might be a presentation you want to take to the Council of Governments and show them what we're doing, because some of it may be applicable in their buildings. Seems to me they're building an addition on a library in Dryden, and some of this technology might be helpful to them. And the last one is just, I'm sorry Peter just left, but one of the options to avoid that chiller, Arel is looking at a smaller version of lake source cooling so that we could chill our, use that for our buildings. That's a joke, folks.
Okay, Carol.
Yeah, I was going to answer Peter as well, just to stay tuned, because I understand from Barbara Ekstrom that thinking in his, that direction of composting is coming in the next 10-year plan. I wanted to comment on the eloquence of each of the three of you in presenting your portion of this. I mean, it's astounding. The information you're presenting is really encouraging, that, you know, that the Tompkins County is showing that we can achieve something, and so the content as well as your eloquence. And I was going to go also in the same direction as Frank, but I was going to ask if this next step would be to use this as an example, particularly the facilities piece of this, for other, a wider group, public and private, municipal, industrial, commercial properties in the county. Could you handle, how many can you handle traipsing through to see this if we start touting it?
So, well, I am
might
a
be a step, Marsha.
Controls for the project that we did here.
Arel, you're not on the mic now. So.
I am a reference for Johnson Controls. Actually, since we installed these systems back in 2006, I've been approached by various city governments, counties. Actually, the city came here, while the city of Ithaca, while we were doing a project here in the courthouse, Bill Gray, and then invited me to attend their Board of Public Works. And I talked about our project, and I didn't want to sway them either way, but I told them that we were very pleased with the project. The city then went forward with an energy improvement project there, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. But I've been asked also and spoken to other county governments about projects. So I get a call probably every other month regarding that. So.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate all this work. It really means a lot.
Martha.
Appreciate it.
Does the last thing Arel mentioned present a royalty opportunity for us? You got it. All revenue right. Generated.
All right. Thanks so much. For my report, just a couple quick things. I did go to Albany on April 11th with a busload of people to lobby about hydrofracking and various bills that are in front of the legislature that have been introduced this year to try to get some progress, legislative initiatives, even in advance of the DEC's report coming out, SGIS coming out. Unfortunately, the next day, there was a vote on the Environmental Conservation Committee in the Senate. Tom O'Mara, our senator, the senator from this area, is on that committee, and he voted against the bill that would have required public disclosure of fracking fluids. That was a shame. In every one of the meetings that I went to, I made sure to hand them a special handout with my card and all of Joe's information about a mortgage recording tax and how important that was. So I multitasked while I was up there. I also wanted to mention, you know, there, as Mike says, there's a great silence coming from Albany. It's because they're on a 2.5-week break, supposedly to meet with their constituents. So when I heard that, I started calling Seward's office and O'Mara's office, and I know a couple of other people who have, to ask, well, when are you coming? So, you know, Barbara Lifton has town hall meetings several times a year. I get a card, and they've got 4 meetings in a row. They don't have, at least Senator Seward and Senator Romero have nothing scheduled. I ask, please, could you think about scheduling something? And at least Romero's office said, well, he'll be back in the district in May sometime, and we'll schedule something then. So that was truly disappointing. I thought that's what this 2.5 weeks was for.
Excuse me, does that mean that it's a vacation time?
Oh, I would never say that, Mike.
I'm just cynical.
Sure, they're very busy. Okay. And I have one appointment, John E. Little to the Workforce Investment Board. So unless there are any questions, County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. Short report tonight, both budget-related notes. A reminder, the budget retreat, our annual budget retreat, to begin the goal-setting process will be next Monday, 5:30 at the TCAD conference room. I think it'll be a lively evening. You've seen, I reported to Budget and Capital, its last meeting, about the numbers we're looking at for next year. It's not a surprise. They're fairly large, and it's going to be a difficult budget year. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. I do think, though, that we need to keep emphasizing whenever we can what's really driving the budget. And I'll just remind all of you tonight, you know, we're looking at a deficit next year that could exceed $5 million. In terms of things that are the major drivers, pretty easy to remember, about $1 million in pension costs that we don't control, about $1 million in mandated cost increases that we don't control, about $1 million in state aid cut that we didn't control, and about $1 million of mortgage tax potential revenue that we don't control that decision. We hope it comes out well. So in terms of how do you come up with a $5+ million deficit, those $4 million items are certainly the major drivers behind our challenge for next year. We're also working with department heads right now on the 2011 budget in light of the fact that we did lose about $880,000 in the current state budget. I asked them to report to me their ideas today. I've gotten a whole lot of emails. I haven't had a chance to look at them yet, but by Monday at Budget and Capital, I hope to have at least preliminary recommendations about how we can get our 2011 budget back in balance given the challenges presented to us because of the recently adopted state budget. I will tell you that I am going to present the budget this year in the same font that Arell used for his title slides. there are times when some of the numbers I'm looking at look a lot like those numbers, so fair warning. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions for Joe? Peter?
Yeah, just before my question, I once spent, I don't know, better part of half a week in Tbilisi in Georgia. Not Georgia in the U.S. Georgia is part of the in Asia.
Right.
And that the writing looks suspiciously like that.
Georgia,
I'm not sure, but it looked a lot like that. Anyway, the question I had for either you or Martha or both is, I haven't heard the word tax cap for several months now. It seems to have disappeared. Did anybody know what's going on with that?
Has not disappeared.
No. Disappear from the paper.
They're still talking about it. I think there are negotiations going on. What I have heard is some conversation about what they call exemptions, which we have called carve-outs. And I think that the two pensions are mentioned. If you listen to, say, Capitol Tonight or Capitol Press Room on the radio, those kinds of interviews shows you get a little more information than the newspapers. Joe, do you want to mention anything else to add?
No, I think that is important, and it's important to know where the counties are on this issue of tax caps. First, there's real concern and opposition to it generally, but also if there's going to be a cap, as Martha said, carve-outs are going to be critically important. So NYSAC as an organization has recommended carving out pension costs, mandates, particularly Medicaid, clarifying the debt service carve-out, which is not very clear at all right now in the way the language is written. And there was a fourth that I've forgotten what it is. I think it's just I think it's the welfare carve-out that would be a part of our mandate.
The welfare, that switch of safety net and
that's right.
Family assistance.
That's right. So that's the NYSAC position and one that we support and advocate as well.
So
I have to assume staff are working. So, Joe, I was going to ask you, have you heard any, gotten any more signals from NYSAC about the home rule bills?
No.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I did want to follow up on Frank's report. It is true, if you've never been to a polo match, they are truly very entertaining. I did want to update people on Hanshaw Road. The time to appeal, I believe, has passed. We have not gotten an appeal, so I don't expect that we will get one. We plan on our schedule to have the offers to all the residents out by June 15th. We may be actually ahead of that. And construction is scheduled to start in March, and I don't really see any obstacles to that. March 2012, that is. And that's my report.
Okay. Any questions for Jonathan? Peter.
John, it's my understanding that that if there are people who choose not to accept the offer or whatever you call it, that their refusal to accept it does not mean that we can't work on their property, that we can't take their property. Is that correct or not?
The way it works is that if people do not accept the offer, and it's certainly possible there are 87, I believe, offers going out, and it's possible that a few would not accept, then the procedure is you file an eminent domain proceeding, which is basically a petition asking the court to put title to the property in your name. That is the name of the county. That's usually a pretty straightforward proceeding. The part about challenging for money is a totally separate part. It's an eminent domain proceeding is basically divided into two parts. The first part is just putting the property in the name of the county or municipality, and then they would have a right to bring an action later on for money. But once the title is in your name, then you can proceed. And those proceedings are usually pretty straightforward because there's very few defenses to that.
Okay, thank you.
Will and then Brian.
John, when you say title of the property, you're talking only the right-of-way in question or the entire property?
Well, in most cases, what we're taking is easements.
Okay.
But in some cases, there could be a fee, but we're talking about a matter of feet. We're not talking about their whole property.
So you wouldn't encumber their entire property?
No, no, okay. just the small, very small areas.
Brian.
Just a note, I kind of took it upon myself to follow up on an email we got the other day and drove through that area, and I was under the impression that that was widely opposed, that that whole project, and I saw it differently as I went by there. For anybody gets a chance, just drive up through there, particularly for the sidewalk portion of it. I would say from the Catholic Church east all the way to Sapsucker Woods Road, it's there's a multitude of signs in favor of the project.
Right, they say we want the walk, and then even from Warren Road towards Community Corner, there
about halfway.
Right, and there are a lot of we want the walk signs, but also still some opposing eminent domain, but. Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you mentioned that. So, anything else for Jonathan? All right. I don't see David Squires. Joe, do you have something to you want to take another shot?
I was going to try to explain the sales tax, but I'll wait till David returns next time to do that.
That's okay. Thank you very much. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay, seeing nothing. I will read the consent agenda, and that would be, if you have anything that you want pulled, just give a shout-out. Resolution A, acceptance of grant from the Community Foundation of Tompkins County Incorporated for Falls Prevention Nightlight Project. Resolution B, acceptance of grant from the Health Planning Council of Tompkins County for Falls Prevention Resource Guide Project. Resolution C, budget adjustments, Highway Division, Resolution D, appropriation of 2011-2012 budget for the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council. Resolution E, award of spring 2011 tourism marketing and advertising grants. Resolution F, 2011 tourism project grant award. Resolution G, spring 2011 tourism project grants. And Resolution H,
off.
H is off. Resolution I, spring 2011 new tourism initiatives. Resolution J, authorizing multi-year aquifer study agreement for the West Branch of Cuga Fishkill Aquifer in the town of Newfield. Resolution K, K is off. And appointments to Youth Services Board, Dustin James and Susan Stafford to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Kathy moves, Frank seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, I am going to move things around so that staff can go home. Susie, you're just sitting, right? All right. I would like to ask Pam, Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsee, Chair, would you go to your resolutions and you can do your report as well?
Thank you, Martha. Yes, the committee met on the 6th of April, and many of the resolutions you see here tonight were before the committee at that time. The whole slew of tourism resolutions, and I got to say, it's a real joy sitting on that committee and watching these wonderful things come through. And there's celebrations throughout the county and all our different municipalities. It's a continuing effort to support our arts organizations, our science center, the PRI. It's just wonderful. And it is certainly one of the more pleasant pieces of being on the planning committee. We had a great report from the annual report from the Water Resources Council. Barry Goodrich, the vice chair, who is the vice chair, came and talked to us. And, of course, the Water Resources Council continues to be a very important advisory group for us, the county legislators, and a resource for our departments. They get involved in so many different aspects of the water quality in our county, and we owe them a great debt of gratitude. And they have their report, which is available for folks if they want to read it. I think that's basically it. All the resolutions that we are going to be considering tonight are before. So unless there are any questions, I will move on to the resolutions on the agenda.
Any questions for Pam? All right, go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to start with Resolution H, the 2011 Spring Community Celebration Grants, and I so move.
Is there a second? Frank seconds. Julie pulled that off?
I did. In general, I had hoped that this impressive group of resolutions, which includes this one, would include in the resolution itself the dates of the events. I asked for that the last couple of years, and I still am asking, hoping it will make it into the resolution itself. I asked for this one to come off because I was puzzled by the page attached to the resolution, which gives the rationale for funding and not funding. There is funding granted for a youth farmers market. There is no funding granted for community outdoor movie nights. And if these are supposed to be community celebrations, I could not make sense of why one was included and not the others. And I didn't know if there was a simple explanation. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
Well, I believe that the rationale for not approving the movies was that the committee who was looking at these and approving them did not consider that a celebration.
The community.
A community celebration. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, any events that are destined or intended to bring community members out to do something together seems to me it could be described that way.
Well, I certainly can take your comments back to the committee. They spend a lot of time working on these, and I tend not to second guess them, but certainly they are happy to take input, and we do that. And your request to have dates of the events is just a perfectly reasonable request, and I will ask that question.
Thank you.
Leslie, and then Carol.
I think, actually, I thought I had pulled it, but I don't know. I think in the explanations there are dates for when these things are happening. Yes. I was pulling it because I wanted to say that there are three of the funded festivals or activities here or grants in which I am involved in either planning, and one is at my job.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
And one is at my day job. So I just wanted to make sure that was public and known. Not like I'm getting any benefit. I'm just working my butt off on them, but that's it. But also in response to Dooley's questions, one of the things that I saw this year, Dooley, in the grant application for celebrations is that the criteria got even more specific. It had to do, you get funding if your event demonstrated either historical or cultural, and those were the two categories. Mm-hmm. It had to be either historical or something cultural. In the past, it used to be as open as community celebrations, people got together. No, it was very, very specific this year to those two things.
Thank you.
Carol and Jim?
In the same vein as Leslie, I believe it was at the STP that I heard Carol Kamen present this slate of projects and talk about the ones that were not accepted by the committee. And my recollection of the way she explained it is that these are meant to, as many of the tourism programs, to help present us the sense of place, to promote and present the sense of place that people have in their communities, and that the movies were more generic and not necessarily as directed as the others towards the particular community and its own, as Leslie said, history and culture.
Tim?
Well, the Village of Trumansburg movies, I guess you'd call them generic, the people that go to them enjoy them, and you know, I'm sorry that it didn't get funded, but I'm pretty confident that it will continue. There are individuals and groups in the community who will probably fund those movies, so I'm sure they appreciate the effort on the part of the committee, and maybe next year.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution H, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Kim?
Okay. Resolution K, authorizing submittal of 2011 New York State Community Development Block Grant Program application for roof and septic and water rehabilitation, and I so move.
Is there a second? Frank seconds. And there's a memo in your red folder on the left side. And now, who pulled it off consent? Okay.
Well, I had the pleasure of taking the agenda on my out-of-town trip and reading it away from here. And when I read the title of this resolution, I could not guess what it was about. And then I read the resolution, and the second whereas made it very clear. And so I pulled it just to ask if it would be possible to make the title reflect the wording in the second whereas. So it says Community Development Block Grant Program application for roof replacement and water and septic system improvements.
That's friendly.
Roof replacement and what?
And septic.
Water and septic system improvements. I'm reading from the second whereas. That's the language in there.
You got that, Kathy? All right, so that's friendly to Pam and Frank. Is that friendly?
Sure.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor of Resolution K, please raise your hand.
Any opposed? All right, that's good.
Okay, Resolution L, authorization to accept grant funds and execute multi-year contracts, budget adjustment, climate showcase communities.
Yes, and there's, okay, is there a second? Carol seconds, and there was a confusion about the lettering. So this is the, as listed on the agenda, this is Resolution L.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's how I was doing it.
Right, so. Okay.
But it's in your packet as Resolution N, is that it?
It should be a correct one in your red folders. It was Resolution N in what was mailed to us. That's right.
Okay.
All right. You want to say anything or any questions?
I have a question. It refers to subgrantees, but I didn't know. I didn't see them identified.
Well, there should have been a sheet in your red folder.
That's it. Yeah.
That
oh, no, that's CBD.
Talks about the.
Where was this memo?
No, that's the CDBG.
That's the CD. That's a different grant.
Right.
It's the septic and the water. The one we just did.
Am I reading wrong?
Well, anyway, yeah, it's isn't it? No, where is
well,
the?
I'm not asking you to change the resolution. It's just a question. Who are the subgrantees?
Is that Ed? Do you want to speak to that? That's Eco Village and
Eco Village correct? And Circle Housing.
Yeah, the subgrantee is Eco Village, acting through the Center for Transformative Action. I think that's the umbrella non-for-profit that they operate under, their educational arm of Eco Village.
So there's just one subgrantee.
Right. They will have some contracts with other people they're working with, but it is one subgrantee.
Well, then maybe maybe that's what the resolution should say.
Well, are you proposing an amendment?
Well, the resolution is plural, subgrantees, so I thought there was more than one. I don't care.
All right. Are there any other questions, comments? Frank?
Yeah, we had quite an interesting discussion that Ed provided a lot of information at just prior to this board meeting. We were careful not to call it a special meeting of the Planning Committee, but it was more of a discussion led by Pam. I'm still having trouble with the sequence of events that led us to, that may lead us to the designation of the use for the county property. I know we struggled with where the items appeared, and did we ever approve that that being the designation? And Ed, the explanation that was given that I heard at the meeting prior to this one was that this was simply an effort to go ahead with an RFP, working with the town of Ithaca to develop an RFP for the best use of this property in conjunction with our comprehensive plan and nodal development. However, the concern I have is that the preferential use of this 26 acres or so is still going to be for the housing project as described in the grant application. Please don't misconstrue my no vote as not supporting the effort. I don't think we ever formally agreed that that would be the primary use of this property. And I know some of you may disagree with that, but in going back over the minutes that I had access to, the Planning Committee and the Planning Advisory Board Committee, there was quite a bit of discussion, as we talked about at the planning meeting, with regard to what went on or what may have gone on in executive sessions. Without revealing a lot of that, which I think we're still obligated to abide by, my recollection is we spent most of that time talking about the use of the Biggs building and not about this particular piece of land. It was simply a division into three parcels so that we could do something with it. So I'm still a little concerned about the process. I'm sure that I'll be in the minority in this vote, and I'd be very interested to see how the RFP develops. And I hope that it provides the kind of information that the planning department and the grant application asks that it provides. Thank you.
Ed, why don't you give us context? I mean,
yes. Yeah. Just for context, and I won't disagree that the history on this was all tied up in other discussions about the Biggs property as well. And so while there was discussion of the totality of the property, there was also a lot of discussion about the building and the sale of the building, and that was the primary focus in a lot of those discussions. However, the current, you know, first we have to remember the current zoning of that property is residential, that the town of Ithaca of that property is medium-density residential, allows only residential development. And so if we were to sell it outright, it could only be developed residentially. So that was the reason for the town's plan calls for residential development in that area, and that was the reason for that being the focus of the thinking. However, recognizing that the town is working on its comprehensive plan now, they could change that, and this RFP development process would be engaging the town and reflect their current thinking on that, what they think that property should be in the future. Many of the considerations that will go into the RFP discussion were part of the Route 96 corridor study that was endorsed by this legislature and by the town of Ithaca. So that sets the context. The context, the Route 96 corridor study said there should be consideration of developing a node around Cuba Medical Center with a radius of 1/2 mile, which includes most but not all of the county property, a good chunk of it, but there's a part of it that's not in that area, and that would be considered in the RFP consideration. And it also outlines a number of potential strategies for thinking about how do you do that. And so that would be the discussion we'd want to have with the town and the residents of the town as we develop this RFP to make sure that what might be proposed there, and again, we're only developing an RFP in a draft form for approval by this legislature if we decide to go forward with it, and by the town of Ithaca before we would do such. But we're developing a draft trying to embody, see if you could embody those principles in a way of soliciting development that would be consistent with those principles. So that's what this is all about, seeing if we can demonstrate that private development can incorporate a lot of these energy efficiency principles, appropriate density for more efficient development, more conservation of land, more affordability of housing, and of some other elements that come with that. So that's the context that we expect this to occur under, and it will be, this is a 3-year grant. We have time to take the time to do that in a thoughtful manner and working with the town very closely. The town is fully and supportive of that approach to going forward with this and recognizing that nobody has agreed to any end result at this point.
All right, just a second. Will, Carol, and Pam, but I want to ask Ed, but in terms of disposition of this property, this body has made a decision that one way or another we were going to get compensation out of that property to help pay for. Could you describe that?
There was, in the very early phases of recognition that we would be moving the health department, there was agreement to have the Planning Advisory Board provide some advice on how that might proceed. The Planning Advisory Board did a report that recommended dividing into 3 parcels for consideration of disposition, negotiate sale of the building first, that's the most important thing, consider the possibility of other uses of the K House parcel with 1 acre, and then the 26 acres they recommended working with the town on an RFP to get desirable development there rather than what you would get if you just sold it on the market. That's been the context we've been working under. It's been discussed in many meetings. There's been no specific resolution on that, but we've asked for guidance, and we've gotten guidance to continue to proceed along that path, recognizing that, again, no action can be taken without approval of the legislature on any of this. We had many discussions with the town over the last couple of years and didn't do those on our own initiative. We did them after discussing this with the legislature, and they agreed that this would be an appropriate way to move forward. Then when this grant opportunity came up, it seemed like a great opportunity to use that process to enhance the desirability of the grant project, and I think it did help do that, recognizing that the primary focus of the grant is on two other projects that have already been approved by the municipalities and are proceeding toward development, that this one is a little different. All we're talking about doing here is seeing if we can incorporate some of those principles into an RFP for private development of a parcel of land. So that's how we've gotten to the point we're at today.
Thank you, Ed. Will?
Thank you, Martha. I actually share a number of the concerns expressed by Frank, though I come to a different conclusion. I actually will be voting for this. But I wanted to lay down my sense that the question of what happens to that land is still an open question. I don't think we as a body has ever formally made a decision. And as Ed correctly points out, there are a number of moving factors, specifically the town of Ithaca developing its comprehensive plan, what its desires are. Today at the meeting, and I thank Pam for calling it and Ed for laying out the case and everybody that was able to come to it, we had a couple of neighbors who came to express concern about what was happening and the fact that they had not felt that they had been, until the very, very last minute, aware that this was even motion. And Ed made it clear that as the process goes forward, it'll be, I think, certainly an effort to involve people that would be directly affected by this. So I will vote for this, but I encourage us all to pay attention to this and consider a variety of possibilities for use of that land.
Carol.
Yeah, can I pass? I was going to speak more to the wider purposes of the grant, so if Pam was going to answer on this detail, I'll come back to me.
Sure. Well, I've got Dooley, too, after Pam.
Actually, I was just going to say that this is an unusual situation for us to be in. We don't usually try and look at parcels of land and develop them so much, and we don't get involved in land use planning, and we aren't in the sense that this will be the town of Ithaca's land use zoning and their rules that we will be living under, but it is an opportunity for us to create something unusual, to create something innovative, to perhaps do the development in such a way that we allow the maximum amount of green space, that there will be some perhaps park area put aside, that there are possibilities here for us to consider. And so I look at this as a real opportunity, as a way for us to help broaden our view of how we do housing, how we do development in our county in a way that is sustainable, in a way that is thoughtful, and in a way that retains the kind of green spaces that we think we know are so important for us.
Thank you, Pam. Dooley, and then Brian, and Carol. If there's anything left, Carol. Dooley?
Yes. Martha, you're asking for a sort of history of what the county has thought and done about the totality of the Biggs property. Reminded me that what I haven't heard mentioned is that the Planning Advisory Board did suggest dividing the property into three pieces and treating them differently, but that the ultimate decision on the 26 acres need not result in a sale but could result in a lease where the county...
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
I thought I was close to the mic. I'm sorry. It could result in a lease where the county retains control into the distant future of how that land is used, because even if it is developed according to Town of Ithaca zoning during our lifetime, there's no more land being made, and it may make sense for the county to have ultimate control of how that land is used into the future. So we would have more control over how it got developed, although I absolutely support working in concert with the Town of Ithaca on this, and I'm going to support this resolution. I was initially just worried about who the subgrantees were, but you reminded me that I should be worried about an assumption that it will be sold.
Brian?
Just that I know that we're at some point going to be considering a lot of different things for this that parcel. My only request, I guess, would be is to have a baseline appraisal done so that we know basically what the value of that is as we move forward, knowing that that's going to change a little bit. But
we did do that. Okay. When we decided we were going to proceed with three parcels, we had an appraisal done that appraised them separately. So we have some idea of the value of that piece, and we will definitely be discussing that with the legislature as we move forward.
Okay. Carol, there's something that still needs to be said?
Well, I wanted to thank Ed and his staff and the folks at Echo Village for doing such an incredible job in bringing $375,000 to our community in what was a very competitive process. Nationwide, what, 20-some-odd of these?
19 got, have been announced.
19 announced. In order to make homes on an individual level up to 80% more efficient than what the typical home is today, energy efficient. So in other words, to allow individual homeowners to do what we've had a lot of money to do on the county level in our facilities, and for the planning of that, not for the delivery of that, for the planning of that, how do you do that? And what process do you use, and then how do you build that kind of thing into an RFP? I actually read the grant application. My read obligate us to a particular property. I mean, we have used these properties, and those are the ones they're planning for, but I believe these methods can be applied to other properties should any one of these three fail to become a reality, because we might not have a developer who wants to do this. But I think that the $375,000 will be well spent. So I hope people will pass it.
Thank you, Carol. Absolutely. This is, I think we're like looking at one detail and missing the forest for the trees thing. We're missing the fact that this is a tremendous accomplishment to achieve this grant and to have this collaborative process underway, and it's really an accomplishment. Anyone else? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution L? Please raise your hand.
Almost had you.
Nathan, jump.
Close.
Opposed. That passes 14-1.
Okay. Resolution M, shall I finish, Martha?
Yeah, go. Yeah.
Okay, affirming Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council recommendation to increase the ITCTC staff director's salary, and I so move. I would like to point, there is a revised version. It should be in your folder with an additional whereas. In it?
And that's your, are you moving that?
Yes, that's what I'm moving. I'm sorry. I should have started off that way.
Okay. Dooley, were you seconding
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hand. Don't raise your hand. It's a short roll call.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
Okay, I have one more. Resolution N, reappropriation of unspent budget allocations for Civil War Commission projects, and I so move.
Second by Kathleen. Any questions? Is that one a roll call, Kathleen? Sure, roll call. Go ahead.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Anything else, Pam?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to move up the Capital Plan Review Committee report, but
so Rob could go home, or at least leave, because he's coming back later. But he's not here anyway, so I think we also need to take a break around 7:30. But so let us, Jim?
Well, go ahead and finish.
I was going to say, well, let's start down the committee list as it is. I don't want to do my report until Arell's back in the room.
Well, my comment is that David was out of the room, and if he has a report, he should give his report.
Thank you, Jim. Frank pointed that out, and then I totally forgot.
Gone.
David, do you have a report? From your hair, looks like you're outside, and you could report it's a beautiful day, right? We all wish we were outside. So, Frank, Health and Human Services Committee.
I thought David might have just been coming back from a foreclosure action at auction. Close. Thank you, Martha. The Health Committee has met twice since this board last met. The actual committee meeting took place on the 13th. Most of the actions have already been reflected on the consent agenda, but there is, in addition to introducing Frank Krupa, and just to remind you, there are now three of us associated with the health area that all have the same first names. We're going to start using initials, Frank. That's the only way we're going to get through this. But we had an opportunity to welcome Frank formally at the committee meeting as well and introduce him around. The other item that took place that was of really great interest, we had a young woman by the name of Melissa Stutzbach, Stutzbach, attended at my suggestion, but at the invitation of the committee. She's a young lady who's a senior at Ithaca College who has pulled together some 20 to 30 of her college colleagues to support a project that we do in this county for the elderly called Project Care. I remember a couple of meetings back I was talking about social isolation of the elderly. She's pulled together this group that is working with Trina Schickel in our COFA, County Office for the Aging Department, and they're going out making sure that seniors have a companion, have somebody go into the home, help in some way, and we've produced some brochures that I'll leave out here. Apparently there are other organizations like this throughout the country, but we don't have one here, except what's done in our own department. We asked if she could come and give us an update on how well it's going, and apparently it's going very, very well. Very supportive, and it's very interesting, and the hope is that this will continue through the next generation of students because of the opportunity to work with the aging population. There was another item with regard to the health department. I just wanted to remind you about the open house. Frank's already done that. Brian's already asked about it. It's the 26th from 4 at least till 5, but there'll be tours and whatnot until about 6 o'clock, Frank. Is that close? And there'll be some refreshments there. And we did liaison reports at the committee meeting. The next formal meeting of the committee will be May the 11th, at the usual time, 3:30. Earlier this week, we had a special committee meeting that some of you were able to attend, at least seven board members were able to attend, along with staff and along with the Board of Health represented. It was to receive the report from Jack Vineski regarding the Community Home Health Agency. There was quite a lively discussion, questions and answers, but that meeting was called not to vote on the report, but simply to understand what some of the details were that it contained. I'm going to turn to Joe for just a minute because I need a little help with this next part. But the sequence that we're going to be dealing with from here on in on the CHA, we need to come back to this body. The Health Committee needs to come back to this body with a recommendation in June as to that's at least the preferred timetable at this point. What disposition will there be with the CHA? Between now and then, we are planning to have a panel discussion that I'm going to turn to Joe to have him describe that particular thing. There is no date set. There was some confusion about the method by which this special meeting was called. I want to assure you, no date has been set yet for this panel meeting, even though we're working on when the individuals can come. Subsequent to that, I will be calling yet another special health committee meeting to only deal with the CHA. That will be it. And we are far from setting the date for that. It will certainly take place after this panel discussion. We've released the report. We've had Marcia did a news release on the meeting on Monday. And if it hasn't already gone out, I believe it's about to go out. It's gone out. The actual agency review by Jack Vineski has gone out so that it's available for the public to review. Our concern is we don't want to panic anybody. We want to assure everyone no decision has been made, absolutely none. We will continue with business as usual. Just to remind you that in the current county budget, unless Joe and Jim Dennis come back with some tweaks in this next review we're going to do, which I haven't heard of, by the way, we have approved funding for the CHA through the end of June, and we have set aside, that's in our operating county budget, and we've set aside money in our contingency fund to carry the funding through to the end of this year so that we have continuity with whatever decision we may come back with. So just to reassure the public that are participating in this program, no decision has been made at this point. Pam, before we go to questions, can I have Joe do that panel discussion?
I just think people out there might not know what CHA stands for.
If it wasn't clear when I mentioned it already, it's the Community Home Health Agency, CHHA, and it's the agency that provides home health help to individuals that qualify through the health department.
It's not a separate agency. It's part of Tompkins County.
It's part of Tompkins County. It's part of our health department. And the only other organization in town that provides a similar service is the visiting nurse service. Go ahead, Joe. Why don't you do the panel thing?
Yeah. The approach here is benefit-cost. So the Vineski report helped us understand the cost and what we should expect both short-term and kind of mid-term in terms of the financial subsidies required and some things that could be done to affect those subsidies. So that was the cost side. We'd like to turn now quickly to the benefit side of this so we can then align costs with benefits. We think the most efficient way to do that, to get the questions that everyone is going to have about this asked and then answered, is by bringing in people who can bring a lot of expertise to those questions, who can speak to them directly. We've been working with Betty Falco from the Health Planning Council and Health Department folks about setting up a panel. It would consist of a number of people. Betty would be the moderator. It would consist of a state official who is the regulator. The state regulates these home health agencies, who can speak to concerns about what happens if there's a change, and will people be affected by this? Will they lose service? Will service be diminished? She will talk about how the state is involved in the regulation of these activities to basically on behalf of clients who need these services. We will have someone who can speak from the perspective of a county that went through what we're going through. They looked at the vesting of their CHA, and they decided to keep it to get their perspective on what factors were important to them. A person who I believe was affiliated, I think the person that's going to be on the panel, affiliated with this county in terms of its long-term care program through DSS and recently retired, to give kind of the perspective of the long-term healthcare system and how this decision might affect that and how we fit into that overall system. We hope to have a representative of a county that has been through this and has made a decision to divest, and a county that did that long enough ago to have perspective, but recently enough to have memory. And so we're trying to get a county rep. We think we found one who can speak from that perspective. And finally, the perspective of a vendor, of an agency that provides these home health services in another place, who can provide the perspective of a vendor. And we're reaching out to one who does this, but also who isn't a competitor, doesn't want to compete for our business, so it won't be a sales pitch. We believe by bringing all those perspectives to the same place at the same time to get questions asked and answered, we can very quickly come up to speed on the benefit side of that benefit cost analysis, arming all of us with good information about the CHA and helping us to make a better decision. Logistics are very difficult, trying to get all these people at the same place at the same time and coordinate with you. We will do our very best to do that. We're aiming for as early as we can in May. So we will be quickly in touch with you with some, and we'll work through Frank on your availability for that kind of a meeting. But we do want to hit a timeline that would allow us to make a decision in June, because time is our enemy. We really need to come to closure on this decision quickly.
And Joe, the panel, will they be examining our CHA in any way?
No.
Are they speaking in sort of in a general sense?
Yeah, in general sense. They're all, I mean, their operations are all very similar. So it's really just to bring those different perspectives to this question, and I think that'll help us understand it better.
Because there's a process, it has to be. Let's assume we decide not to continue this. You can't just walk away from the license. There's a wind-down period, and the state prescribes that. So I think it's important, when this meeting takes place with the panel, it would be really, really helpful if as many of you that can attend, because then we'll all have the same information at the same time, and we can pepper these folks with our questions.
Right, and I appreciate that seven legislators were there on Monday.
The,
I was going to say something else.
And staff, too. We had a very good response from the staff. Of course, they're very interested. And the Board of Health members were there.
Right. I remember what I was going to say. Is the Vineski report on the website?
Yes.
Okay. It's posted, Marcia, on the health department's webpage.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Anything else in your report, Frank?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. I think we ought to take a break for 5 minutes and pick up where we left off. So if we come back in here at 20 of, please. Thank you.